Hello and welcome to the Library Cafe, a weekly program of table talk with scholars, artists, and librarians about research, ideas, and the formation and circulation of knowledge. I'm Thomas Hill. I'm delighted to have on the show today the artist Barbara Beisinghoff. Barbara is an internationally acclaimed graphic artist from Hanover, Germany, who is in residence here at Vassar College this fall until October 14th. We're showing a selection of her artist books and other works in the art library here at Vassar, as well as in the Francis Lehman Loeb Art Center through October 14th. That exhibition is entitled When Light Touches Paper. So, Barbara, this isn't your first visit to the Hudson Valley here, is it?
No, it is not. I have been here in 2009, and I stayed in the Women's Studio Workshop for an artist book residency. But that was in winter. It was in Rosendale, and they always, after my work, they took me out to do cross-country skiing on an old train track, which was very beautiful, and they didn't want that I am all the time in the workshop. And I did an artist book there. I produced The Angel is My Watermark in an edition of 47 books. This women's studio workshop want to be like an incubator and encourage artists to do professional work. Therefore, this high edition, they wanted to do 50, and then it became an edition of 47 books. Tanja Kellner and Anne Kalmbach sold many of these copies. One is in the Library of Congress, and one is in the National Museum of Women in the Arts in Washington.
Yeah, wonderful institution that is. I have a friend, Christina Wasserman, who's a curator there.
So I see.
Very happy to get your book, I'm sure. So.
They sell many copies into the U.S. to colleges and universities who hold collections of rare books. And so there is already one in the Vassar College Special Collections for many years.
Yes, and anyone can come and request that and actually see it. And we have a copy on display in the exhibition in the art library also.
Wonderful.
A nice thing about your books, I did go in and look at what we have, including The Angel is My Watermark. They have such a nice texture and they're so colorful. And I just wanted to say, maybe 3 weeks before, I had been looking at one of William Blake's early books, and your work reminded me of his in many ways, in that it was,
that
you know.
It was a great honor. I admire William Blake very much. When I was in London last year, I saw there is a special room in the Tate on display. And it is the spiritual in his books, I think. And he was a single person. He was not in a group. He alone.
He was a kind of an outsider.
So
you've been an artist for a little while now, haven't you? A few years.
Yes, for a long time now.
So how did you get your start?
I wanted to begin still earlier. My parents, my mother is from Berlin. My father is from Silesia. And they have been teachers in Memel, which is now Klaipeda in East Prussia. And then they came as refugees to the West, to a very lonesome farm near Hanover. And we got a care parcel from the U.S.
I remember those.
Care parcel. And then there was a beautiful dress for my mother in there and two children's books. And one was with an animal with glowing eyes. And I could expose this book to the sunlight during daytime. And in the evening, in the dark room, then these eyes glowed. That was an impression. Now I do artist books. So I grew up without any books. And then
that's so interesting. I wonder if you could still find that book somewhere on used books.
Yes, I looked already up, but I did not find it.
Oh, you did?
Another
bad,
book was a pop-up about Christmas, children in the U.S. Yeah. And then I came very early to etching. As a pupil, I was in a course of etching. I learned etching from a very old artist in Hanover, and he showed me an aquatint from Francisco Goya because she was susceptible. It is a woman sitting in a cell in a prison, and light shines out from a small hatch onto the face and the chest of the woman. Three tonal variations shape the figure in front of the shaded background. I was fascinated by the black, archaic workshop and this emotional approach and saw this picture with Akvatin.
And that's the Goya then, yes?
That was Goya. And this was my experience for my artistic career. This whimsical, dark store was so different from the neat row house of my parents.
Oh, wow.
So I got into the black art.
Yeah. Interesting. And etching is a process that involves acid, and you use wax to mark the plate where you don't want
it. It is asphaltic resin.
Yeah.
So it's always dark material. And this copper, when you work on it, it's really very fascinating. Mm-hmm. And then I work with what happens. Mm-hmm. I don't only work with what I figure out. Uh-huh. I work with what happens. And then you see on the surface of the etching basin, sometimes flakes swim up to the surface. Uh-huh. And then it's such a beautiful pattern. Uh-huh. And I then had a plate with colophonium resin and then back up and face down, mm-hmm. and I got this on my plate. These flakes reserve then, and mm-hmm. around mm-hmm. the etching bite. It looked like stones then, and we had hiked in this year in Laponia, mm-hmm. very far on the King's Trail, they call it, and then I only made a few corrections, and it became this King's Trail.
And you're still an etcher. You still do etchings.
Even
today, in copper plate mostly?
Yes. And I always do it with iron chlorate, iron 3 chlorate, because it does not have gas for the, which infects the lungs.
Yes, yeah.
It is only dirty.
Yeah. Interesting how many artistic processes, including painting, are hazardous, you know, to the artist. So one thing about your work, like William Blake's work, but more so, it's so conscious of the material that you work in. I just find that interesting. And so apart from Goya, were you interested in other artists who work with materials?
I think I asked you earlier
about Dita Roth, but you're not particularly influenced by
No, I didn't know. I know his work from Berlin, from the Berlin Gallery.
I mean, I know his sausage book, so.
It is funny. I'm more interested in the material. I'm material conscious about the process. I'm process-oriented.
Yeah.
So the muse mm-hmm. does not kiss me when I sleep.
Yes.
I get inspired when I work. So you see, you observe the process, and then that is the next step, and the next, and it's I'm working additionally. Mm-hmm. So you will see in the project gallery, you see a big etching, and I begin with a corner without any tracing before, mm-hmm. and I work from step to step. Mm-hmm. Then I do the drawing, the etching, the printing. Next day, the drawing, the etching, the printing. Mm-hmm. And so it becomes very complex.
In the spring, I had an artist who was here from the Women's Studio Workshop. She'd come to us, Radha Pandey, an Indian artist.
Yes.
Was a paper maker, mainly. I mean, mm-hmm. that was a big part of it. But also a wonderful book artist. She makes wonderful artist books. And the paper, the handmade paper, is an integral part of what she does. If she were mm-hmm. to just buy paper and use it, it wouldn't work the same.
Mm-hmm.
And you also make your own paper, and it seems very much a part of what you do.
Yes, but that is another story. When I was 17, I came into the etching, and then it is very hard work to do etching. It is, in Berlin, they would say it's maloche. It is really hard work. Mm-hmm. Most terrible thing is the cleaning of the plates. So you are in the basement of the house. You are cleaning these plates. Mm-hmm. You are always dirty. Your hands are dirty. Uh-huh. And I had to do something, I had to be free. And then there is a second thing. With etching already, you get impressions in paper. Mm-hmm. So you are already a bit in the paper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you see the corners of the etchings, you see it is in the paper.
Uh-huh.
So art historian told me, Barbara, goes more deeper into the paper.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard a song of paper. It is from Pater Imberdis, from the 17th century. It's from 1693.
Yes, and this is in your book that's in the case.
Yes, it is. In The Angel is My Watermark. Oh. And have you ever heard about a poem from the 17th century, a long poem about papermaking?
No, not before you.
And It was written in Latin, but he was French. Mm-hmm. And it was only translated into German in 1945. And I read this poem, mm-hmm. and I became so interested because it is something wonderful to see something against the light when you have writing paper, mm-hmm. old good writing paper, mm-hmm. handmade paper, and you see the watermark. Mm-hmm. But then I wanted to do a watermark which is over the whole page, mm-hmm. And not only a sign, like it was only a sign for papermakers. Mm-hmm. It began with Petrarca in Italy, uh-huh. in Fabriano. He wanted to have his own paper with his watermark, but I wanted to play with it. Now uh-huh. there is no handmade paper in the commercial use anymore,
yes.
and now the watermark becomes emancipated.
Yes.
Oh. And my story about this yeah. angel is my watermark mm-hmm. is about a little emancipated watermark.
Oh.
And I say it can now dance on the page. It must not stay in a corner. Mm-hmm. It must not serve the paper medlers anymore.
Uh-huh. Ah, wonderful. And the watermark is made with wire? Do you make
yes,
it on
you
the screen?
Can, you can the, yes, make yeah. it from wire, which mm-hmm. you stitch on the screen.
On the screen.
But you can do it too with other materials, mm-hmm. With filigree material.
Uh-huh. It's almost transparent. Well, it is transparent. You wouldn't ordinarily see it if you didn't hold the paper up to the light.
Yes.
Yeah.
And this material, I afterwards took different material, and it is already very beautiful to see these screens.
Mm-hmm.
You always have to hold it against light.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the difficulty about it.
Mm-hmm.
So in museums or in exhibitions, they ask me then, Barbara, how do you want to show these? These are mm-hmm. beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
But how would you do it? And then I had to think about it and build a house for a clairvoyant
yes.
or a room for a clairvoyant.
Uh-huh.
And I could work with students. They had special lamps and moving lamps in this tower
mm-hmm.
So that you can see the watermarks.
Mm-hmm. And we've done Room for a Clairvoyant in the art library. Yes,
yes, I'm very proud.
Brick,
and
yeah.
I thank you very much,
oh, sure,
Tom,
yeah.
for the possibilities and for the room you gave me.
Yeah.
And it would be wonderful if people could see it there.
Yeah, it's quite exciting because mm-hmm. for me, it's architecture, and architecture and books I associate together in some way. Don't ask me why, but they're both spatial.
I think so, and it is because of
yeah.
many reasons.
Yeah.
A book is already a structure.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
And you can see a book, you can, some of my books, they can stand,
mm-hmm.
and then you see rooms already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when you turn the page, it's another room.
Yes, yes, a door. In a way, isn't it?
And there is a beautiful page in a book of Christian Andersen, The Wild Swans. He says the little princess, when she turns the page and when she reads, the people come out of the room
mm-hmm.
of the book and talk to her. But then when she turns the page, they have to go back so that
uh-huh.
it does not get in disorder.
Uh-huh. And you did a version of that tale also, The Wild Swans.
Yes,
yes, yeah.
And it is already in the special collections.
Yes, yeah,
they
yeah.
bought it. It is the fairy tale, and, mm-hmm. and I made a collage of two texts, of the Grimm version and the Andersen version.
Uh-huh.
And Andersen is later, it's 19th century.
Yes.
And it's not a fairy tale, it is an artificial fairy tale.
Uh-huh.
It's much longer, but it has marvelous pictures.
Yeah.
And so I made a text collage to come to an end. And I printed the text of Grimm in red and the Andersen text in green, so you can see it exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, I have much red, the Grimm, mm. because it's much shorter.
Yes.
The princess has no name.
Yeah.
And the paper for this book is made from stinging nettle,
uh-huh.
so it is a speciality.
Yes, and stinging nettles figure in the story. Yeah, she's a
yes.
princess, and she has to weave
She has
clothing.
To weave 12 shirts. Uh-huh. In Andersen, it's 12 swans, and in Grimm, it is 6 swans.
Mm-hmm.
It says a stepmother,
yeah.
and she's very
mean
stepmother. Mean
yeah.
to,
yes, yeah, yeah.
to the princess. She turns them into swans,
mm-hmm.
and the sister is not allowed to talk for 6 years,
mm-hmm.
and she weaves stinging nettles and makes shirts of them,
mm-hmm.
and then it's a long story.
Yes, yes,
and
yeah.
In the end, she's already on a Scheiterhaufen, which is a, you have a flame under her, and she should be burned as a witch. But then in this moment, these 6 years are over, and there's six brothers as swans, they fly towards her, and she can throw a shirt over them, and then they became
princes
again. Yeah. Only for the most youngest brother, she did not come to an end with one of the sleeves. So he keeps to have one wing.
Yeah, wonderful story. So did you sting your fingers making the paper out of stained metal?
No, but it was a long story, and I did not make the paper myself in this case. Always when I have very ambitious projects, I work together with paper makers. Yeah. But it was a long researching process. A stinging nettle only has a content of fiber of 4 or 6% of fiber, and they grow stinging nettle, and it has 14% of fiber. And so we got this from Hamburg, from the university, from the botanical department, and my paper maker made this paper from this material.
And some of your paper you make from flax, is that?
Yes, that is another ambitious project. Yeah. This I made in 2013, and it is now in the art library, in the big showcase. And I moved to the rural area, to the country, a bit west of Kassel.
A nice little house out there you have in the... nice big house,
And I invite to this house now, since 5 years, I invite artists in residence. The application is always done by Women's Studio Workshop because they have such a good website and so many opportunities for artists. And I had already the 10th artist this year there. But when we began, it is together with a big park. But it was not a park in the beginning, only in my, before my inner eye, it should be a park.
Yes.
And but it had been an old lust garden, a pleasure garden. And with the old walls from 1650. In the first year, it was just grass. And the horses were there eating the grass. And how should it become a park? And so I let people plow the
grass,
soil. And then in the next spring, I sowed linseed, 50 kilo of linseed. And then in June, it blossomed, blue.
Must have been beautiful.
And then I made a research. You asked me in another time how I come to my text. This was a text which I did research. And so I just observed and how it blossomed and then how it was harvested. I made the linseed. And then this became the book Dew Blue. But why is it called
Dew?
And it is like this. You can have a water ratting or you can have a dew ratting. And so I harvested the stems and had a handful and put it on the earth, on the soil. And then the dew comes and the sun and the rain. And they just let rot all the lignin out of the of the fiber. And only the flax fiber stays. And that means dew ratting. And the blue is because of the color of the blossom.
When we talked to Radha about her work, one thing I could see was, and she was really knowledgeable and spent a lot of time with these paper-making families that went all the way back to when paper moved from China into the Middle East. I mean, there were some of the same families making paper. But the whole process of making the paper was very natural, as opposed to industrial paper-making, which is the dirtiest industry there is. But the hand paper-making, it gave her a connection to the environment, the paper-making itself did, in a nice way. I mean, water and then cellulose from plants that grow.
All the papers I used were from banana. When I was in China, I made a performance with a bamboo paper, which I just crushed in a blender with water and then applied to the bark of bamboo after I had made another installation. So that is the nature behind it. But the process in factories, it did not so much change. The principle is always the same. And it's always made from plant fibers. But the distinction is that in factories they add material.
Chemicals, yeah.
Chemicals.
And they dirty rivers and, yes. And they cut forests down.
Yes.
In a much different scale, yeah. We had, when you were out in front of the library last week and you were applying paper appliques of words to the great plane tree that we have there.
Yes.
And that's one of the wonderful things that you do, I think, making the tree a kind of book and a platform for text. Someone called in and they were afraid someone was writing on the trees, you know.
Yes.
But the nice thing about paper is that it disintegrates. I mean, it's biodegradable. Although, on the other hand, it will last thousands of years if you keep it. You know, it's a good stable medium, more so even than parchment. Paper actually is more stable over the long term. So, but it is nice that it does return to the environment very nicely, paper. And that paper that you're using to couche letters onto the tree there.
When they planned my residency here, it is supported by the CAAD program, Creative Arts Across Disciplines. And I'm very thankful that they invited me. Mm-hmm. It was Tom Pascio who liked my idea with a communicative art project. Mm-hmm. So it is not only in the art library and it's not only in the Francis Lehmann Loeb Museum. It is, everyone can see it in the middle of
the
library lawn
on the
campus.
Yes, yeah.
And that was really fun. And
spectacular.
It was spectacular. Yeah. And I...
It's a beautiful tree, too, that great
plane
tree.
It's a marvelous tree, and some days later, I made a guided walk with a Jeff Horst, and he explained it is a descent of an Oriental sycamore tree and an American sycamore tree, but this here has a very wide trunk, very wide bark, and it's called now the London Plane Tree.
Yes, yeah.
And we picked up fiber at the Women's Studio Workshop. It's a very short-cut cotton fiber because we let the students scoop words from a special screen in my mold, in the paper mold. And I made another tree in the sculpture garden.
Mm-hmm.
Not I myself, but let the
students
do it.
Yeah.
And I was in the PDS, in the Poughkeepsie Day School,
too. Oh, with children, yes.
And children made an enchanted forest.
Oh, that's
all this
wonderful.
In the first week I was
you were
here.
We've been keeping you really busy, yes, I know.
And when I saw these trees in the Poughkeepsie Day School, I saw it was birches. What should I do with white letters then?
Oh.
So I asked Chris Petrone from the Women's Studio Workshop to put pink pigment because it should be seen on the birch
tree.
Trees.
You should be able to see, yes.
But for the plane trees, was good too.
Yeah, it's a wonderful idea. Bringing words into the forest.
But we took different words to the PDS and to the campus.
Oh, you did, yes. How do you choose your text that you use? Paul Celan, you said, and
For the PDS, I worked with the fairy tales. So it is a fairy tale tree. It is a little enchanted forest with fairy tale texts. And it was very good because my texts are in German.
Mm-hmm.
But Silke von der Emde, who invited me to this, to Wasser, from the German department, she insisted that we translate the texts.
Oh.
And that was very good. So the children read the texts and they even sang the texts sitting around the tree in this enchanted forest. And for the campus, we chose mainly Paul Celan. And I did a project like this 2004.
You have good taste for poets. So
For the first time. And it was because of a poem of Goethe, Johann Wolfgang Goethe. It was Wanderer Sturmlied. That means the lied when he hiked. They hiked a lot in the 18th century. There is a Goethe Lake in Darmstadt where I lived at that time. And I saw this lake. I wanted to have the skin of the birds on a lake. But that was not possible.
Right,
because I observed there were dogs in the water swimming. So they would have disturbed my birds on the surface. So I had sails above the lake and they reflected on the lake. So it was perfect. I had
you could still see it on the water in the reflection.
And then I saw there are so many beech trees around this lake. And that was the beginning of my idea to have a poetic forest. So I had a poetry book in the forest.
Yeah, it's a wonderful idea. And books have a connection to trees, don't they? I mean, apart from in the 19th century, of course, they used wood pulp to make paper, but I think the word codex means wood.
Buchstabe in German, that means Buch is beech.
It's
still older, so yes. It is from the...
So the English word book itself comes from tree.
In German, it is Buchstabe, and it comes from the runes.
Yeah.
Stab means stick.
Yes, uh-huh.
And Buche means beech, beech stick. And they had their first words from beech stick, from our area where we live, in Europe.
Teutonic, Europe, So you use other unusual methods, like water jets in your printmaking?
Yes, that came because of my watermarks. When you work with transparency in paper, and then you get very soon the hose where the water runs through, then someone built me a little pistol with a tab.
With water jet.
A pressure. And I could write words. You could really use it in a hard pressure, then it can even cut the paper.
Cut the paper,
And you can do it very gently, and then you can write and draw with it.
Yeah.
And in the one of the big papers in the room for a clairvoyante, in your art library, there is the dancer on the window, and there you can see the water jet drawing. Mm. It's very different from the watermarks.
Mm-hmm.
The watermarks are always very precise,
Yes.
And the water jet drawing is something like a fluid language.
It's like handwriting.
Yeah.
I remember reading a while back when we had an artist book show in the case that the term grapheme, that graphic art comes from the Greek word to dig, dig in the earth. It's related in English and maybe in German too. I'm not sure to the word grave.
Yes.
Some of that exhibition had to do with the concept of time, that because it was about history, that there's a way of thinking about time where time isn't linear, like a line, but where it's something that you can dig out of the earth, like archaeology, and slowly uncover, or a tree, rings in a tree, where the deeper you go, the farther back in time you go, but it's not a line anymore. And I wonder, do you think about time when you're engraving?
Yes, first the digging. The paper making with this water jet, both, is more digging and graphene, and more like a sculpture with a water jet drawing. It really furrows the paper. And you have then a ditch and a dam on the sides when you have thicker paper. When you have the locked up paper, it's really a dam on both sides. And with a cold needle method or technique in etching, it's the same. You scratch.
Yes, and there's a
and
furrow.
And then there is a dam.
And it appears on the print. In the
If you do the etching, you just draw, but then it is deepened by the etching fluid. And so it has a lot to do with sculptural work, I think. And it is like the archaeologist's work. But then you wanted to come to the time and mechanisms of memory. I wanted to tell about my room for a clairvoyant because it is Cassandra, and it's a long time ago. It is the Bronze Age. And in the glass case, you will see, I did not believe that someone who is so clever and so wise as Cassandra has no library, and therefore I made her a library from emancipated women from the time of today. But
well, she could see ahead, so she was a clairvoyant.
Ahead of her time. And she graved in the memory and goes ahead and can see what will happen to Troya. But her father did not want to believe her.
Yes,
and he made her sit in the prison of his own castle. And that was so hard for her. And then she was taken as a prisoner in the end, after the war was lost by the Greeks. And so this is working on memory. Silke von der Emde, who invited me to Wasser, she works upon memory. By the way, where I live, it is a very rural area, but there they have something very interesting. And they have the ITS, that is the International Tracing Center. And after the war, was lost by Germany in 1945. Mm-hmm. There were many displaced persons in Germany, and it is now a UNESCO documentary heritage. Because up to now, families find each other. And so this is working on memory. And this Cassandra, I did not work about Cassandra as the old figure. Mm-hmm. I worked only upon a novel of Christa Wolf, who lived in the DDR. Uh-huh. And Silke von der Emde made her work upon DDR female writers. Mm-hmm. And she wrote this novel, Christa Wolf. She is Christa dead Wolf, now. Yes. I met her. I asked her if I can use her text for my watermarks and for my installations. Yeah. And we got friends. Her husband still lives, Gerhard Wolf, who is, he edits books. And she somehow lets her Cassandra hold words against light. She thinks about words and how they change. Huh. And you see it now in the presidential election campaign.
Yes,
you can change words and words become different. So Menelaus, the Greek king, he came to Troia, and Cassandra knew it was the friend of his father.
Yes, uh-huh.
But then in the time of the years, it became different.
Yeah, the war.
He became an enemy, and then began the war. So then manipulation of words
made
wars.
Interesting.
Wars don't appear from now to tomorrow.
Yeah. Interesting in the context of the history of our own two countries, you know.
Yes.
Them, you know.
Yes.
Yeah, very interesting, yeah.
And this etching in the project gallery, it is called Time Trace.
Yeah.
So tracing the time.
Yeah. In the room for clairvoyant in the art library, that you have the Wolf words on the prints there also, yes?
Yes. These are about Christa Wolf. At first, she's in the citadel, and then she is already the prisoner of Agamemnon, and she is on the ship to Mykene, and there her remembrance, like on a thread, she can follow it back and forth, and she can remember herself as a little girl, and then she's going to her death.
Interesting, as you get older, you tend to think like that, don't you? I do. I live in my childhood much more than I used to when I was younger.
Yes, and she knows exactly Clytemnestra, Agamemnon's wife, will kill her. And will kill her husband too, I think, in the end. And then before the end, she thinks of her life.
Very, very interesting subject matter you choose. It's an important part of your work, your subject matter.
Yes.
So you have your own press, The Glass Dragonfly?
Yes.
Can you talk about that?
Yes, The Glass Dragonfly. Sie tanzt vor mir her, die gläserne Libelle. Sie tanzt vor mir her is a haiku. The first sentence has 5 syllables, the second sentence has 7 syllables, and the third sentence has 5 syllables again. And in English, it dances in front of me. Mm-hmm. The glass dragonfly, it dances in front of me. Mm-hmm. And every artist who does artist books, should he say, my own edition, instead of this only own edition, you give it a name. So when I think about art, what is art? And for me, the glass dragonfly is a symbol for art. First, it does not exist, what you draw or what you do. A glass dragonfly, it does not exist. Then the second, it is very glistening. When you look at it, it is very beautiful. But it changes. And like the glistening, sometimes gets different meanings. That is the glistening
depending
part.
Depending on the light,
Depending on the light. Yeah. And then the third, it can flow very quickly. It can make 50 Stundenkilometer, kilometers in an hour.
A dragonfly,
A dragonfly. Yeah, and it looks beautiful, but it is an animal which has a prey.
It's a predator, yes.
And it can even devour the prey while it is flying. Mm-hmm. It can do different things. It has 4 wings, and it can do different things with its four wings, like a helicopter.
They're on the lake, actually, all the time here in the back of the campus. And and in my backyard, too, sometimes they tease my cat. You know, they know the cat is trying to jump at them, but they're too fast.
So that one of my artist books is called... I made many of them. Mm-hmm. And in the one which is in the glass case in the art library, you can see Braille.
Braille, yes.
Braille script, because art, you cannot explain everything. And you have to feel. The blind person cannot see anymore, but it can feel.
Yeah, and your work is so tactile, you know, because of the watermarks.
And I'm very proud. There are the best holder of who collect my work in Germany is the Herzog August Library. The first librarian was Ephraim Lessing.
Gotthard Ephraim Lessing. Famous, library famous.
Yes, and then they have 11 of my artist books. And one of them, they sent me a newspaper. Blind group of blind persons had visited, and they showed them my book with a Braille script. And I saw on this newspaper picture, this person, blind person, did not touch the script. It touched the embossings. And in my artwork. And that was interesting,
that
too.
That is, yes, it's such an important part of the work. It's as important as the text, So can you talk about some of the big commissions that you've had for large works? Because you do work very large. Both in Germany, you've had big public commissions, and also China,
I have a very good curator, and she asked me to do work with her, and I always said no. I can't do it. I work with paper, and it is so fragile. It will be gone next day. But then I tried this, and I made this first project in 2004 with this poetic forest. And then she asked me to come with her for a project in China. And then I thought about it. It should be a permanent installation there. Then I know, yes, I can work with copper. I can work with metal.
Yes.
And but I cannot do etching in this far country. In this, only in 3 or 4 weeks, this cannot work. And then I let people drill holes into metal, and it should be a communicative project again, like I did here on Wasser with the tree, poetry. And I let people hole star clusters into huge metal plates. And it is like a canopy across the walkway.
Yes, we could have had one in our exhibit last spring when we had an exhibit called Astronomical, and it was about the stars and the planets. So
I made one of these canopies based on a poem of Li Bai on Mount Lushan, which might be very well known in the States, because around 1900, Pearls Buck lived there.
Pearls Buck,
she's a novelist. And she lived for a long time in China. And on this beautiful 1,800 meter high Mount Lushan on the Yangtze River, the Yangtze flows around this mountain. It's a very hot plain there, but on 800 meter, it's very temperate climate. And even Mao Zedong lived there later. And he had his meetings with Ho Chi Minh there. He chose the nicest places when he was famous in his country, I mean. And I did another project last year in Sichuan with a canopy, with a celestial canopy, with the drilled holes and with the whole cosmos.
Yeah. Is there an artist colony there that you stayed in? One of the books in the art library case you did in China, the red...
Oh, yes, that was another project.
That was,
was the third project I did in China. I was invited to a printmaking base, which is in Shenzhen, which is near Hong Kong, 14 million inhabitants. But this artist village is in an old factory surrounded by a wonderful Hakka village. Hakka people have been a tribe of the Han Chinese people. And people from the U.S., rich Hakka people who emigrated, they helped to restore this village.
This old village, yes. It's
and
an ancient
I lived
village.
In, these doors were 3 meters high. And I thought of another poem of Levi about the shadows. A bit frightening when you stay alone in this huge house with these shadows. And so I made this book there.
Oh, it's a wonderful
book. And this print base is called Guanlan.
Guanlan. And then in Germany, you had a public commission. Was it a city hall or a courthouse?
Yes, it's good that you asked. I did it in 2005. And I won a competition for a project outside. And I let 250 children be involved in this project.
It's a wonderful project.
And I took, not etching plates, would only be much thinner.
Yes.
But I took thicker copper plates, which are now in the pavement around the town hall. But before they put it into the pavement, they got a pavilion for me, and I worked there with all the children for 3 months.
Yeah, so the children did the designs on
the plates? I put asphalt lacquer on the plates, and then we gave them the copper needles to draw
on
them.
Oh, they actually engraved, yes. Yeah.
And I asked them, what is the most important for you in your town? And then one child, 4 years old, said the lion. I was astonished because I did not know a lion in the in the town, but he said, yes, it was a circus. This child had done his work, I think, in 6 minutes. The lion, and very powerful the
great
design.
Yeah. Yeah.
And while other young people, 20 years old, they were long there. It takes longer until they have finished.
Yeah.
But it was a marvelous work.
Yeah, and both those commissions, and we were talking about architecture, were very architectural, aren't they?
Yes.
I wanted to ask you about the welcome piece in the glass case in the art library is your book about Goethe's Lady Friends.
Yes.
And it's a very interesting book, I have to say, especially having to do with Goethe, who's an important symbol of German culture,
Yes.
But also because of your association with the Women's Studio Workshop.
Yes, I did it in 2007, I think, or I don't remember exactly. I did a book about Goethe's color lesson, which is very, very interesting, and it has about 200 paragraphs about his observations of color.
Yeah, very important to art historians now.
Yes,
But not in his own time.
Not in his own time, because I expose another work which is below in the showcase, and there he was very said that the academics in his time did not admire it so much, work.
Yeah.
He did not believe Newton, but he made his words, how he chooses his words, and he did not write only about the colors, about the white too. He says the room between us is the air. It is the
ether.
It is the Raumdurchdringung. It is something in the room which is transparent, and the white is more or less transparent. My watermarks are in between the transparency and the white.
Yes. Uh-huh.
So it was interested in his observations in the white. And after I had made this book with 32 etchings, which is in many public collections in the Anna Amalia Library in Weimar, and after I had this exhibition in the Goethe Museum in Frankfurt, then I was very relieved because it was a hard work.
Oh, yes.
And then I began to play. And I thought this color circle could be, I could emplace any of his women into these colors. He said red is the most important color. It is on the top of his color circle. Then comes the violet. The violet is associated with Friederike von Brion. And he was inspired by her, by this young girl, to a very beautiful poem. He made Stund im Nebelkleid die Eiche. And then the next was the red. And this was another from Offenbach. She gave him a chain with a heart, but he went off. He did not want to become the son-in-law of a banker.
Yes,
he wanted
yeah.
to make his poetry. Mm-hmm. And he said, stay alone to do your art,
yeah,
he said to himself.
He was very self-involved, I suppose
yes.
is the word.
And then the third woman, it was Charlotte von Stein.
Mm-hmm.
I think he did not take serious the women.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore,
yes.
I put them on the edge of the paper.
Yes.
To see them better, you have to touch a bit.
Yes,
and
so there's
to come
a half
nearer.
A portrait on each page in a way.
Yes.
The pages are folded, however.
Yes.
It's not an accordion book.
He always wanted to go forth. And then it is the yellow with the Christiane Vulpius.
Mm-hmm.
He married her, but he married her very late,
mm-hmm.
when he had already three children. And when Johanna Schopenhauer, the daughter of the philosopher,
yeah. uh-huh.
gave her a cup of tea.
Mm-hmm. So
then she was in the society of
mm-hmm.
Weimar. Then he married her.
Ah.
She had protected him from Napoleon's soldiers,
uh-huh.
because she was a very tough woman,
uh-huh.
and she shut the door when uh-huh. the soldiers came. He was
yeah.
afraid.
Yes.
He did not even go to her bed when she died. And then comes the green. And that was the only woman who made poems.
Mm-hmm.
But she answered him in the form of poems.
Mm-hmm.
And that was Marianne von Willemer.
Mm-hmm.
He included her poems mm-hmm. into the West East Divan,
mm-hmm.
which is a collection of poetry. He did not tell anybody that this were not his own poems.
Mm-hmm.
Only Hermann Grimm, son of the Brothers Grimm,
mm-hmm.
he was a literature
yeah.
professor, and he knew that these
he
poems were
out.
From
yes.
her.
He
yeah.
took her work. That's
yes.
very interesting.
Yes.
Yeah. So anyway, it's a wonderful book there,
yeah.
a wonderful piece of art, and it looks good in the case, too,
just yes.
so you can see into
yes.
it. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
So I want to thank you, Barbara, for appearing with us on the Library Cafe today to talk about your life and work, and also to talk about your wonderful exhibition, When Light Touches Paper, on view in the Vassar College Art Library and the Francis Lehman Loeb Arts Center. So thanks for coming.
Thank you very much, Tom.